Welcome to Coffee Calm Connections Podcasts with your hosts, Sarah and Stuart. You'll hear from people like us, people like you, and together we'll find ways to make personal development easier and more accessible.
Good morning, Stuart. Thank you very much again for our, what is this now, our third relaunch episode for Coffee Calm Connection.
It's good to see you. Tell me how you've been. How's the last few weeks been?
Really rubbish. And what I thought would be really interesting today is if I can essentially just moan and tell you why it's been really rubbish, and then you can tell me how to change the thought processes in those moments. I was about to say, you can tell me how to pull my socks up and crack on. And then I thought to myself, having seen one of your last posts about this stiff upper lip, crack on, no, that's the wrong thing to do. I just need to process and manage, but maybe you can point me in some directions for that.
All right. So we've been talking about old Sarah versus new Sarah. We're not going to do any more pulling your socks up and cracking on, are we? We're going to try and crack on in a better way. What's been tough?
Okay, so I think it's potentially hormonal. There's loads of stuff going on, external stuff, as there always is when you are a human, a mum, a human, a working person. There's always stuff that goes on that are stressors, but I don't seem able to manage it in a way that I want to manage it. So I am functioning, I'm managing, I'm coping, I'm carrying on, I'm doing all of the tick box exercise. So I drink between 2 and 3 liters of water every day without fail. I've massively reduced my alcohol intake. I'm counting calories and proteins and nutrients. I'm taking multivitamins. I go to the gym 4 times a week. I sleep enough. I'm tracking my sleep. I'm doing all of the things that the tick box exercise say to do. But I feel so on edge all the time. And I don't know how to not.
You know, I'm quite cynical. And what I would say, in 25 years of doing this, I've not met anybody, hand on heart, who has come to me really stressed, really unhappy, and said, do you know what, Stuart? It all got better the day I drank 2 litres of water. It didn't happen. And I think all those things, they're nice and they smooth off the edges and they make things a bit better. But to me, they feel like another thing you can say, well, I'm not even getting that right. Do you know what? I'm not even getting that right. I'm not even getting my multivitamin right. Oh, I'm buying the wrong one. You're just constantly failing. I think what I would suggest anybody did that was feeling like you is trying to figure out which plates they're spinning and then be really honest with themselves and say, do I need to be the one that spins them? And then the other question would be, entertaining the thought that maybe some of them fell down and got broken, because we're not all as irreplaceable as we think we are. There's other people that can step in, and also until we shout and say I'm not coping, people don't listen. But the other thing is, maybe it's about setting different types of priority and starting at a different end of the puzzle. Those would be the things that I look for. And you said to me earlier, when we were talking, you're very laid back, Stuart. And I think probably if you ask people, they'd probably say too laid back. But I think the reason what I was trying to work on in myself is just being really honest about what I've got control over. There's an awful lot of conversations that will start with people, and it's, what if this happens? What if this person doesn't get back to me? What if that doesn't happen? And I try and always bring it back to, there's nothing I can do about that. There's nothing I can say in this moment that's going to make that person pick up the phone or make that person going to deal with my inquiry better or somebody pay the bill they haven't paid me. So actually, I'll just focus on the stuff I can deal with and let the world go crazy around me. And that's probably what we should be thinking about.
I like this. So literally just writing a list of all the things that are in my head that I want to achieve, should achieve, worrying about, struggling with.
And I think it's, we write, when a client or somebody I'm working with says to me, I've not done an exercise, my first thought is, there's obviously something in that exercise that makes you feel uncomfortable. It's obviously something that if you start it, you might do something you don't want to do. And actually, when people, I ask people to write a list of all the stuff that's going on at the minute, quite often they don't want to do that because writing it down makes it more real and makes it more visible. But it's something I would really encourage you to do because there's probably an awful lot on there that isn't in your control. So there's absolutely no point in giving it your attention. And it's like anything, if you can chip away at the stuff you can control, you've got more capacity to do with the stuff you can't.
So tell me about this, because I think one of my problems is I believe I have control over things that I don't. And I was having a conversation with myself, as I'm sure many people do, I hope, this morning, actually, about my daughter who's having a difficult time at school. And I know we talked about this last week, and I think you said you had a meeting at your daughter's school because of some things going on. I now have a meeting at my daughter's school this week because of some things going on. And the way the issue was presented to me by the school was that my daughter had done something wrong. And the more I've uncovered when I've looked into it, I've been through phone conversations, I've spoken to other people, it's not at all. And the school of, you know when someone like picks a trendy topic and goes, oh, this happened to me, and then everyone jumps on it going, oh my God, this is so bad. And then you look at the circumstances and you're like, that's not what this is at all. So let's just, you know, pipe it down a little bit. So there's a whole conversation going on there. And I feel so heartbroken for my daughter. And I'm really trying to balance this tiger mum, you know, like, my daughter's not at fault, because I often go the other way and go, well, you must be at fault. So I'm really trying to balance those two things. And I'm really trying to be fair. So we've got a meeting at school, and my aim is to go in and say, this is not okay. There's a wider thing that needs to be looked at here, and I'm really unhappy about it. But actually, at the end of the day, I cannot control what happens at school, and I can support my daughter, but I cannot control certain aspects of this. And I wonder if, like, I have an expectation that, because I always have this expectation, if you communicate properly, everybody else communicates properly and does what they need to do, and they don't.
But people communicate properly in the language that suits them. So that for them, they're communicating what their need is, and you're communicating what your need is. And it's not necessarily that they're not communicating properly. It's just that they're communicating something different to you.
Yeah.
So it's about sometimes, that, you know, I often say when people are becoming impatient with things, I would say to them, but you must remember that if something's your priority, it's not the other person's necessarily.
Mm.
So sometimes I'll get an email from a colleague or someone I'm working with, and they say, you still haven't sorted this out for me. And I think, because that's not actually my number one priority this week. It might feel like your number one priority, but when I weigh up all the tasks I've got to do, unfortunately, you're down there and you're going to have to wait. And that's not communicating it. It's just not believing that we've got the same list of these priorities. And I think particularly when we're parents, it brings out the rawest instinct in us, doesn't it? I spend all day giving people advice on how to manage their own children. And I always say, God forbid you look in my house. But the key to that is looking in the same way. What aspects of the situation can I actually, do I have any power over? So I'm not there when she's at school. So actually I've got to accept that I don't have any power over that. I haven't got any power over how she communicates with friends or what relationships you have. So I can only control these bits. So that's where I'm going to put my focus.
Mm.
And when you become strict with yourself on that, it begins to lift a weight off. But the other thing is, and that's what I'd be more interested in, you probably start to see the stuff you're avoiding or the patterns that you get into. I had a real wake-up call with this. A few years ago, I was moving my office and a diary fell out that I'd had from 10 years ago. And in the back of it was a to-do list. And 10 years on, half that stuff still wasn't done. And that tells me that stuff has been moved from to-do list, to-do list, to to-do list. And it's probably because there's something about that task I don't want to tackle. You know, and it's about knowing that if there's an aspect you're not dealing with, it probably tells you about you and what you don't like. So if I was to look at my to-do list, things that tend to get bounced to the bottom would always be admin-y, paperwork-y things. Well, it's actually because I never think I'm that good at that. It's not really my forte. Bring me to a meeting and ask me to have an argument on your behalf. Love that. Be there.
Stuart, would you come to my meeting this afternoon?
Well, tell me the time of this. But ask me to, you know, deal with your parking fine, then I'm probably going to procrastinate on that because that's not what I'm very good at. By learning what tasks you've got control and what you haven't, you'll begin to see those lines.
I'm interested in this. And I'd be interested in the reality of the situation. So my feeling when you've said that is I actually do the opposite. So when there is something I don't want to do, I go usually all out at it in a way that actually makes the task a bigger issue. So I will do it, but I'll try. So prime example, I was talking to my husband last week and I was saying to him, I've set myself a task, 3 to 5 actions per day that could potentially lead to business for my client, for my business, right? 3 to 5 actions, that's all. It might be an email to someone, it might be a LinkedIn connection, it might be a telephone call. But it's a very low bar, 3 to 5 actions Monday to Friday. And I'm really struggling to do it. I sit down to do it and I can't think what I can't, like, I don't know who to message. I don't know who to, and I get myself all in a knot. And he said to me, so just do one action a day. So this week I set myself the task of doing one action a day. And I did 25 on Monday because it's like a compulsion. I hate doing this, so I must do it. I hate doing this, so I must do it, which actually just goes over. Do you know what I mean? It makes it worse.
But I still suggest that there's probably other stuff that isn't within your comfort. So you do that instead. Because what we all have something that we call an ontology, kind of the version of ourselves that we create. The lies we tell ourselves about who we are. You know, I'm a good person. How many people do you know have got themselves into trouble and then begin the conversation with, I'm a good person? We tell ourselves those lies all the time. Part of those lies we tell ourselves is what we're good at and what we're bad at. So we tell ourselves, I'm really good at dealing with difficult tasks, except that difficult task I'm not doing anything about because it scares me. And it's actually, I think really there's something about being quite ruthless and saying, these are all the tasks I'm not dealing with and this is why. Because you will probably start to spot certain habits and traits that are there that are weighing you down. And part of that is learning to accept the bits you've got no control over. Mm. And I think that's probably where we can tell ourselves another lie. So we say to ourselves, well, look, I'm gonna do this thing over and over again, and that's gonna keep me healthy. I'm never gonna get ill again as long as I have 7 grams of this and 6 grams of this and this grams of this, and no one must interrupt me on a Tuesday because that's when I meditate. If it was that simple, hospitals would be empty, wouldn't they? You know, no one would be ill, and we'd never get a curveball. And it's why I'm most suspicious of people that write 5-year and 10-year plans. Because I'm certainly not where I expected to be 5 years ago. In fact, I'm doing something completely different most days now to what I thought I'd be doing 5 years ago. And actually, even since Christmas, my plan has changed. I'm doing different stuff this month to what I thought I would be doing. And actually, those 5-year plans and those 10-year plans, they do feel a bit like control, don't they? They do feel just a bit like, I'm going to do that. And if you look at most people that are successful, this won't go down well on LinkedIn. Awful lot of it was luck. They don't want to tell you that. The gurus want to tell you it was hard work, and you know. But the success story usually comes with, and then I just happened to bump into, or somebody gave me, the hard. You know, I think it's definitely at least 50% luck versus 50% hard work, and those plans and all things are often just about control.
Yeah. I think that's really interesting because I have equal part belief, no, not equal part. I fully believe, but disdain the belief of all of the rhetoric that you hear about health, about focus, about self-worth, about success. So I often look back at my teens and 20s and wish if I'd been a bit more focused, if I'd had a plan, if I was healthier, if I worked harder, if blah, 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 blah. And one of the things that I'm really trying to do this year is to come away from the all or nothing and be more consistent. So, but I think that might be a lie I'm telling myself, because I'm very much in all or nothing and I'm trying to be consistent with all. And that's really hard.
I think in the 90s, this concept of sort of goals and targets and outcomes and, you know, the Zig Ziglarisms became very fashionable, didn't they? And but actually, they owe more to sort of evangelical religious beliefs than they do to personal development. They're really very much focused on achieve your goals, hit your outcomes. But there isn't much personal development science behind that. There's much more about guilt yourself into success. But then if we look at most people's success route, those plans didn't tend to link up. The people that had the plans and did the personal development and did the things aren't necessarily the successful people. And, you know, I know an awful lot of people who've been on Tony Robbins' Awaken the Giant Within events. You know, they must have missed a bit because they're no more successful than I am. Yet they invested thousands in awakening their giant. Mm-hmm. There's a real danger that those things just become another thing to feel guilty about.
Do you know what I found really interesting? So, you know the book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, Stephen Covey. So one of the things he says in the first chapter I found really interesting. So he did a lot of research about the word success and what success means. And one of the things he was saying was way back when, I'm not going to say a time frame because I can't remember, maybe 100 years ago, the way in which you measured success was very different to how we measure it now. And success was measured through values like integrity, transparency, honesty, and real kind of core social creature, human nature things. And the way we've evolved, success is now measured through very different goals, but they're very superficial goals. So you'll go to sales training, for example, instead of, and they'll talk, you know, it's all about the customer. This is what you got to do. And when you get this objection, this is the phrase you use at this particular moment to manipulate this outcome, blah, 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 blah. So it's very, very manipulative and it's very surface level. And I think there's a lot of books out there and you mentioned, you know, courses and thousands you can spend, which is very, if you get up at 4 a.m. and you drink a pint of water and then you go for a 10-mile run and then you sit down and you get all your admin and all these acronyms like banjo, bang out a bad job first, or whatever it is, like that, all of these things, the 7-minute working week, the blah blah blah, it's completely overwhelming. It completely takes away human nature. And there's a guy I follow on LinkedIn, and I did go to one of his courses and I got sucked into the thousands of stuff and then checked myself and tried to back out and ended up in it was awful. Anyway, I watch him on LinkedIn and he's one of those, like, really, you know, this is amazing. I am amazing. You just need to do these three things and you'll make your millions, blah, blah, blah. And I noticed the other day, because I've seen him popping up in my feed again, he's been gone for a while. I haven't seen those for a while. And then I thought to myself, even somebody like that has trouble with 24/7 consistency. And that was a bit of a like, oh, okay, all right. So it's not just me. These people that say all of this stuff, they also have bad moments, or, you know, times where they just cannot face LinkedIn, or times where literally if I can get out of bed, get showered and get my kids to school, then I am winning and there's no other requirement that day. Maybe other people have those and maybe that's okay.
I think it's that thing that we we're misunderstanding where the fun comes from and the pleasure comes from. The fun for happy people isn't in the goal. It's in the striving towards the goal. It's in the doing the activity. It's in doing the thing they enjoy. But we've been sold, I think, a marketer's dream that we've all got to retire at 30. And if we've not achieved that, we're failing a little bit. You know, so you haven't got a million in the bank. You haven't got this. But actually, most people don't get that. Most people don't achieve that. And actually, it's just a very, very wonky metric, really. But it's become very much our culture. It's become the culture that our children are adopting, isn't it? You know, I must have this handbag. I must have this phone. I must have this. How many followers did your Facebook story get? How many very, very digital metrics that we're all opting for, rather than those soft touches of, did I make someone smile today? Did I have fun earlier? Was I happier? Those have become uncool. But actually, pursuing those very digital metrics, I'm not sure how they can really bring happiness, because you and I both know that whenever you set yourself a goal, when you achieve it, it's always a bit of a, let's just try and hit the next one.
Do you know, two things that just popped into my head. One is on that goal thing. I never hit a goal ever, because when I get close, I move it every time without fail. I was at the gym yesterday and I have wear a MyZone belt, and I wanted to get 200 MEPs in the gym, and I reached 200. I actually reached 212, which meant I had to get 250. So I always move the goal. So there's something I should learn from. But the second thing is, and it's back to the rhetoric, the sold, the marketer's dream, which is like outside your comfort zone is where the magic happens. And when we spoke last time, I forget if it was on a podcast or just in conversation, I think it was the last podcast, we were talking about the C curve. Like at your 20s, you like, I can take on the world. You hit a low, and then by your 40s, you're like, yeah, I'm good. I don't need to take on the world. So one of the things that I've been thinking recently is, I am always out of my comfort zone. Every second of every day, I'm out of my comfort zone. And sometimes I really want to get back in and I don't know how.
But it's about not knowing what brings you comfort, isn't it? And actually, if you don't know where happiness lies and you don't know what brings you joy, then you're not going to feel okay. One of the things I talk to parents about sometimes is that we can fall into a trap of thinking that our children need to be elatedly happy every minute of every day. And if they look a bit pensive or they're a bit sad, it's our job to lift them back up. But actually, it's okay just to be okay. It's okay just to, you know, have an all right day. You know, nothing amazing happened, but it was all right. And I think that the problem that we fall into there is that we are looking for this sort of moment of some ecstasy, of ostentatious wealth or a huge happiness. But actually what we kind of should be looking for, is this all right? Can I be like this for another 10 years? Would that be okay? And usually when people talk about that happiness curve of being quite happy in your late teens and then it dipping in your 20s and 30s, it's because they've fallen into that trap of believing they still must chase something. But as we get older, we realise that we didn't need perhaps as much as we thought we needed, or we can find happiness in other ways. In it, and the danger is that we stay in that bottom bit and then never quite achieve it.
What do you do when your core belief system, your subconscious belief system, is in that chasing something, and you can be superficially aware of it and superficially try and make the changes, but the drive is there? But how do you address that?
Well, I think I would be asking you, what are you chasing? So what is it you're feeling unfulfilled on? What does fulfillment look like? And the problem is, if we don't really know, we'll keep chasing it, and we'll never be satisfied. There's points in my career where I've said to myself, I would really like one day to be invited to speak to an audience of X number of people in this particular environment. Having done those things and been lucky enough to do them, it always feels like, well, could have tried hard, could have had 1,000 more people, could have had 2. So success can't really be measured on those things, or we'd never be happy, because it always slides, doesn't it? So it's actually, what does that bring us? So does it bring, is it financial security? Is it this? But the danger is that what we think it brings us is self-worth, justification, pleasing other people. Are we good? And then what we've got to have that really tricky conversation with ourselves about is, what do I get when I hit that goal? So not do I get a new Tesla or do I get this? What is it I really get? What is it that would really look like? And usually what it means is that our children are kind of proud of us, our partner's happy with us, that we've got somewhere warm to sleep tonight, and if we want a new toy or gadget, we can afford it. Beyond that, the rest we're tricking ourselves, I think.
Can I tell you something that I was really pleased with yesterday that really made me feel good? And it came out of a really negative situation, so I was surprised. Back to my daughter in this issue that blew up yesterday. So we had a long conversation. She was very tearful. We went through everything, you know, checked everything, talked about the facts, had a look at through phone and things that have been going on there. And I said to her, when you've done something wrong, I will call you up on it. But when you haven't, I will have your back 100%. And she said to me, I know you will, Mom, because you did in year 7 when that whole other issue blew up and nobody else believed me, but you did. And then it came round that I hadn't lied and it wasn't my fault. So she remembered that. And I felt really pleased about it because I was so uptight last night. Like, oh, I'm going to get tearful because it's nasty. Yeah. But she was much better. She like came out and she said like, thanks, Mum. Thank you. I don't know what to do in this situation. Thank you.
But you did the bit that you could control. You can't go into school. You can't change school. So then what have you got power over? You can make home happy. You can make her feel valued, loved, appreciated. Oh, the rest, unfortunately, it's about riding that journey, isn't it? And we can't always, you know, the hardest thing about our children getting older is that we can't smooth every road for them. We can't make everything safe. So what can we control? So let's make sure we can do that. We can make family sound nice. We can make sure that we build your confidence bucket, that we make you feel like a nice person. That's where you put your attention. And when you put your attention there, you might not be able to control what's happening over there, but you feel better because you've done something.
And it's back to that. That wasn't valued by money or arguments or power plays. That's not what happened there. I didn't go storming into school, yelling and screaming at people or phoning people's mums and saying, I didn't do any of that. But what, it was a connection. There was a social connection with my teenager, which is very difficult at the best of times. And that I really valued. That really made me feel better. And I don't strive for that. That's not, you know, when I write my fulfillment, that's probably wouldn't have been on there had that not happened yesterday. So I think that I've just written down a couple of things. So what plates am I spinning? What of those do I have control over? And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to write, you know, you just write free flow and you don't think. My question is, what does fulfillment look like? And I'm just going to write a load of stuff. Whatever comes out. And then I'm going to read it later.
And pull that backwards. So fulfillment looks like having happy children. Well, stop. And then say, well, what do happy children need? If fulfillment looks like being a good partner, well, what would I have to bring to make that? What would, rather than judging it by the just basic metrics that perhaps you've used in the past?
Do you know what? I love that, because one of the things that I think is missing in today's society is, I don't know, ownership and accountability. So what does fulfillment look like? Well, it looks like I win the lottery. It looks like I can then go buy a yacht. It looks like I can blah, 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 blah. There's no ownership or accountability on me in that. So I like this. What does fulfillment look like? And what do I have to do to achieve it?
But sometimes It's not about achieving. Sometimes it's just about existing, isn't it? Sometimes it's just saying, it's been all right. It's been okay. Didn't get every job I wanted to do done. But, you know, I got to bed and I've got the same number of children I went to bed. I woke the day having, you know, they're all achievements. You know, they're all right. I think it's not about what have I achieved, what have I done, because actually, you know, you reflect and you don't remember those things later in life. It's just about what does okay look like?
Yeah.
What has been all right? And you know, you asked me at the beginning, why can I be relaxed? Perhaps that is what I try and do. I wouldn't say I always achieve it by any measure, but I do always try and ground myself and my children in, let's just worry about now. And that doesn't mean, you know, not having life insurance, and it doesn't mean that I don't, you know, that I don't have a diary that's mapped out for the next year and my businesses are planned out. It doesn't mean any of that. But it does mean that I know where I have control and where I don't. And the greatest example for this, for me, controversially, would have been the pandemic. And the people who I found struggled the most during that period, or one of the types of people, were people that liked to be in control. We used to be at the, you know, the people being at the top of that tree. But it was because they were being told, you've got no power in this. And actually, what was interesting about it is they then looked for a malevolent beast that was taking that power from them, because they weren't comfortable. So instead of, you know, right, we need you to stay in your house for the next 4 weeks, their response wasn't, oh, that's annoying. It was, who's done this to me? And I'm going to hunt them down because I need to take back power. But I'm not sure that hunting made them any happier, because they still stayed in the house. They didn't get out any quicker because they did that. But they were able to name a bogeyman. They were able to put something to it. And actually, they perhaps would have been more fulfilled or happy if they just were with punches.
Yeah.
And that kind of is where, you know, where we've got to try and be, accept what we can and can't change.
Do you know what, Stuart? Here is my accountability to be at peace with existing. I've tried to change my language. I'm going to do these three things that I've said I'm going to do, the plates and the control and the fulfillment. And I'm going to send them to you. And maybe our next podcast, we can talk about that, what, how it went, what blockers there are, how it might help other people if they do the same exercise.
I think to really focus on, am I okay at the moment, is a good starting point. It, you know, do I, if that stayed just as I was right now, would I be all right? And chances are you would be. It's the stuff that happened yesterday or the stuff that might happen that's scary. And that's always your starting point. But then really just listing those problems you've got and just saying, not in my gift. There's nothing I can do. There's nothing I can do about that. You know, I mentor a team of 100 people now. And I look at that team sometimes and I find it hard, because sometimes I can think that person could really be so much more successful if they just did that or a bit of that. But what I have to accept is that I can only offer them the support. I can only say, look, just change that. And a lot of the time, they won't take that. They won't take that mentoring. But it's not about the offer. It's about whether they're ready to do that thing. And what might seem like an easy thing for me to do might feel really tricky for them. You know, I talk to people a lot about being more visible, raise your visibility, let people see you exist. I like that. I like showing off. But not everybody likes showing off. So we've got to accept that we can only do so much. We can only help as much as we can. And we can only help within our own frame of reference as well.
So interesting. I love conversation like this, because I think it expands my frame of reference And that's really what this is about. Like, you get caught in your head, I suppose, in your own circles, whichever way those circles are. And sometimes they're a bit different, but they're essentially the own circles or habits or patterns, whatever you want to call it. So I really enjoy conversations like that, because it just feels sometimes like it ekes it a bit open. That frame of reference just expands a bit wider. And that's really all any of us can do on a daily basis, is just keep building that.
And I think asking that basic question of, what would I say to somebody else if they were doing this right now? What would I say to somebody else? You know, what would I... We had this conversation shortly after your stroke, didn't we? And I said to you, you know, you're viewing it through your old prism. But if it was a friend or a family member, you'd be saying to them, go and have a lie down. And it's really about trying to treat ourselves with the kindness we would other people. And if we can't do that, then that's got to be our first mission, hasn't it? Just trying to be a bit kinder. But my other bit of advice is, read a few less self-help books, because they tend to be written by people that want to sell books, not necessarily people that want to help. And there's a difference.
There absolutely is. All right. Less self-help books and three lists coming up.
Absolutely. I look forward to reading them.
Brilliant. Thank you, Stuart. Thank you very much for your time today.
All right. I'll see you again soon.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Your reviews, shares and followership is incredibly valuable to us. So please like and subscribe and share, and get in touch if you have anything you want to chat about.